Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Hey everyone, Logan Medish of High Caliber History and the host of the No Low Ballers podcast here. If you're passionate about firearms, accessories, and everything in between, there's one place you need to check out: gunbroker.com. Whether you're looking to buy, sell, or just browse, Gunbroker is the world's largest online marketplace for firearms, ammunition, and all the gear that you need. It's a trusted platform that connects buyers and sellers across the U.S., offering everything from rare and collectible firearms to the latest models. Plus, with a wide range of accessories, parts, and ammo, GunBroker.com is a one-stop shop for gun enthusiasts of all kinds. So whether you're an experienced gun owner or you're just getting started, make sure to visit GunBroker.com to find exactly what you're looking for. And don't forget, you can also tune in to our No Low Ballers podcast to hear more about the history behind your favorite firearms, sponsored by GunBroker.com. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. I'm your host, Logan Medish of High Caliber History. It's great to have you guys here with us this week. As always, I've got my partner in crime, Alan Faulkner, and our guest today is the incomparable Serena Juknowski. And if you don't know who Serena is, you will soon, because we've got a great show with her. Serena is a competitive shooter. She is a world record holder, or a national record holder in competitive shooting. She is a writer. She does consulting. She's had magazine articles written about her, in addition to her being a writer. Serena is just a really impressive person who, the rest of us, Alan and I, we go to the range and we're like, that was a pretty good range day. I think I shot pretty well. Neither of us can shoot anywhere close to how well Serena shoots. So, Serena, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me and those kind words. I don't even know what to say to that, Logan.
Well, they're all very well deserved. I speak for Alan and myself on that. I know he agrees. Let's take it back a step first. And how did you get started in the competitive shooting world?
Honestly, complete accident. It is not something I ever thought I would be doing. I mean, it wasn't like, I was four and I was shooting like a lot of the other professional shooters or people that you'll talk to who have been shooting on a high level for a very long time. I was a nerd, a bookworm. I carried like a ridiculous number of books to class, even though I didn't even need to. That was me. So my sister and I did a program with my dad called Indian Princesses. And it sounds really dumb, but it was kind of like a outdoor Girl Scouts, the closest thing you could get to the Boy Scouts at the time, okay. Where you got to do derby cars and archery, and they had BB guns. And that was the first time I really had any kind of interaction. I grew up with my dad hunting, and he would shoot, but just for the purpose of going hunting. He didn't compete. He wasn't like, oh, I'm collecting all these guns. It was basically, I'm a deer hunter. I'm an Ohio deer hunter, and that's what he did. So we started with the BB guns, and I really enjoyed like bringing back the target. Like there's pictures of me and my sister were like holding them up, but it was twice a year. And then they stopped replacing the targets. So then you couldn't tell where you shot. And I realized that I lost interest because I didn't even care about going to shoot if I couldn't tell how I did, which okay. I have no idea to this day why they did that. We got BB guns when we were about 7. We shot them a couple times, but I wasn't strong enough to pump it. So I lost interest pretty quickly because it was too hard. And I didn't shoot a real firearm until I was 14 years old. A friend of ours came over the house. His name's Chuck Malone. I didn't grow up with grandfathers, and he basically is like my adopted grandfather. Just showed up one day with a .22 and asked my dad if my sister or I would be interested. I just remember being so angry. I was so mad because I was in the middle of homework and they're like, hey, come in the backyard and do this. I was like, oh, like, let's just get this over with. Like, I was mad.
I don't have time to have fun. Doggone it. Stop it.
That is literally what happened. And I remember I looked at them and I was like, do I have to pump this? Because if I have to pump this, I am not interested whatsoever. And they're like, no. And my first thought was, well, why didn't you show me this before? This seems a lot easier. But whatever. They hung up a little chicken silhouette, steel chicken silhouette, about the size of a half dollar, like 25 yards away. And I didn't realize until years later how strange it was that typically when you start a new shooter out, and I do a lot of coaching now, or if someone who's never fired a firearm before, you off of a bench or prone or something where they have a stable platform. No. The first shots they ever had me fire were offhand. No support, just stand up there and shoot. And they walked me through, and Chuck was like, all right, make sure you have triangles because those are the strongest shape. I was like, all right, you do this. I just followed each direction. He's like, all right, hit the target. Ding, hit the target. I turned around and my dad was shoving another .22 round in my face going, do it again. And I'm sitting there going, what did I do wrong? I did what you wanted. Like, aren't we done with this now? And they had a conversation later. I didn't realize they both looked at each other and went, I can't believe she hit that darn thing. There's no way that she actually did that. Because I hadn't picked up a BB gun in 7 years by that point. You know, I had zero shooting experience. All right. Took it, put it back in, did the same thing. Ding! And they were like, what do we do now?
Like, it's amazing what you can do when you don't know you're not supposed to be able to do it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I started shooting, they were called like buffalo shoots once a month at Tusco Rifle Club in Ohio. They were what I call a redneck version of silhouette shooting, because silhouettes all offhand, chickens, pigs, turkeys, and rams. But we shot half of them, actually three quarters of them off of cross sticks. So the first five, the chickens were always offhand. But we shot it on a pistol silhouette range. So we're using like cast bullets and .22s. None of them actually added up to any sanctioned targets. But at the time we won primers and things. It was just a fun thing. And the whole reason Chuck brought me down there is he wanted me to come and beat all the old guys.
I mean, these days, a brick of primers is a pretty good prize.
Oh, yeah, I look back and I'm like, man, I won probably thousands of primers. And at the time, I didn't really know. I just was like, Dad, what do you want? All right, cool. Here you go.
Your dad's like, I have got a great system here. She's right. Crushing it, and I am stocking up.
Right. Daughter of the that's year. Exactly,
that's exactly what happened. And he started going with me. And then shortly after that, about a year or two, because it was only 1 month during the summer. Okay. Like once a month during the summer, rather. So I would go out there, and I would shoot just the .22 category. And then Chuck built me my first centerfire rifle, which was a 3220. So I started out with these like really oddball calibers, because then the next thing that I went to was muzzle loading and black powder. And I had a Kentucky long rifle reproduction that was taller than me by the time you put the ramrod in it. So I'd have to use like a notch up in the ceiling to try to get the ramrod out at Canal Fulton Ramrod Club.
Although, to be
it's
fair,
it's a pretty typical teenage story. You know, that's how most teenagers started shooting. That makes sense. All right.
Well, and tall muzzle loader, taller than you, to be fair, you're not exactly the tallest person in the world. So
no, I'm not, but I'll have to find a picture. It's pretty darn comical. And I mean, I was smaller at the time, too. But I was looking for, I was so mad that over the winter, I'd get like, by the end of the summer, I was like killing it. And then the winter came around and I was like, I suck again. I am not good at this.
Yeah. The recurring theme I'm seeing in your history, Serena, is a lot of anger. Mad that you had to go out and shoot. Mad that you weren't allowed to shoot. So
mad that you shoot well, which is a strange sensation. I've never been mad that I shoot well.
Well, I've never shot well, so it's hard. I don't know how I'll react.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt once said, I don't shoot well, but I shoot often. And I that's kind of my mantra in life, you know.
I wouldn't say I get mad when I shoot well, but what is really different for me and what I've learned, especially over this past year, is that your idea of what well is changes. So at first, I remember I was just happy. I started shooting, backing up a little bit. Right about that time, I was looking for programs to shoot, and I got turned down by 4-H. They were the next county over, and they said, you know, you can't join. You're not in our county. I'm like, I'm 20 minutes over the border. They're like, I'm sorry, we can't take you.
Dang.
And stumbled into a junior high power program, which is its own funny thing in and of itself. But at the time, I was happy if I was hitting the target. Then I was happy if I hit the black. Now I'm not really happy unless it's a 10, and I'm sure that at some point I'll continue to, once I max out on 10s, be mad that I don't have a higher X count. And mad isn't exactly the right word either, but one of the things that I absolutely love about competitive shooting is that it allows you to challenge yourself and work towards a goal that's individual goal, but you can also have team matches. So you have that community and support, but you're also working on developing yourself and skills that you can use for the rest of your life.
Yeah, when I'm coaching, I tell the students it's okay to be unsatisfied, but not mad. You know, you can be unsatisfied with your performance. You can be unsatisfied that the results weren't your best work, but you know, you can't get mad. And you know, you know, I joke, but I think that's probably the attitude I think you're getting here, is that you're maybe not satisfied with the exact, you know, with the results, because you knew that you were capable of doing better, or that you could have performed better, or done something better. And you know, that's why, you know, you're who you are and why the rest of us aren't.
No, that's exactly what it is. I really like that word, is unsatisfied. But when they brought me outside to shoot for the first time, when they interrupted my homework, that time I was mad. That time I was mad.
Oh, that's funny. So I want to back up just a little bit, because you mentioned something that is absolutely pivotal to your story. As you mentioned that, you know, Chuck brought you to one of those shoots because he wanted you to beat all the old guys there. and I think that's perfect, because I think we need to address, you know, the elephant in the room. You know, you are a young female in what is, for the most part, a male-dominated sport. Now, that's not to say that we don't have some fantastic female shooters in this space, but, you know, they are not the norm. And so, curious to know, you know, what has your experience been like as a young female shooter, and has the perception and reception of that changed over the years?
That's a very good and somewhat loaded question at the same time.
Loaded.
So,
that's why we let him ask that one.
So for the audience, after I went through shooting at Tusco and shooting like the version of silhouette and muzzle loading, high power service rifle, which is my main discipline that I hold a national record in now, we shoot 200, 300, and 600 yards with an AR-15. The discipline is extremely old, and it is considered an old guy sport. I think traditionally we have, and I mean, these are big numbers compared to how it used to be. We had about 75 females, between 75 and 100 females, and I think about 800 and 900 competitors. at the national matches this year. They used to have thousands of competitors, so people will argue that the sports are dying, but they started out with trapdoor Springfields, then Grands, M1As, and when they moved to the AR, it allowed a whole lot of younger people, and especially women, to more easily compete because of recoil management. So that made it a lot easier. I would say everyone's always been incredibly supportive. I actually ran into one of the guys that I met when I first started shooting at Tusco at a gun show. And he was just absolutely like shocked to see me because he hadn't known what happened to me since I had done that in, you know, 2013. It's 2024 now. And he was just so amazed at how far I had taken things. Mm-hmm. And they were always very, very supportive. There was another young girl that her grandfather would bring her out, and she was like my nemesis at that range. That was the person that I wanted to beat. So you had all these older guys and then the young girls. And going back to service rifle, you still have a majority of older people and older men competing. There's been a couple people over the years who have been like, hey, you know, trying to be over helpful. And then realizing that I outshot them anyways. And then they'd be like, oh, no, never mind. It's all good. So I've encountered a lot of that.
To back up on something you said a second ago, I mean, in the shooting sports, I mean, the service rifle and CMP in general is kind of got the perception of being, you know, the older person's sport. Right. Especially in the last decade when, you know, the action shooting sports, be it action pistol, USPSA, IDPA, three gun, has really kind of come to the forefront. What's the future look like for service rifle and CMP competition overall? I mean, is it starting to, you know, you mentioned with the introduction of the ARs, it's getting a little bit younger. Does it look like that's a trend that's going to keep going, or is it still going to kind of languish a little bit behind the action sports?
So ARs came to the forefront somewhere in like the early 2000s. And from what I understand, I didn't start shooting service rifle until 2015. So I came in when we had just the AR-15. There's been a lot of changes, like the allowance of optics. Previously, it was iron sights only. We are limited to a 4.5 power optic. And the reason for all the limitations is when you look at the history of service rifle as a sport in general, it goes back to the 1800s, the late 1800s, around the idea that soldiers needed better marksmanship. President Roosevelt was a Theodore Roosevelt. Was a huge proponent of the bill that was passed in 1903 that created the National Matches and the National Board for the Promotion of Rifle Practice. Basically, he was not personally happy with how soldiers fought in the Spanish-American War and thought that if we had any cope as a country, that civilians eventually, but first it was just military, but eventually he wanted everyone to be able to learn to shoot and to shoot well so that if they were ever called to war, they could defend the country.
Yeah, around that time, the urbanization of America and everyone moving to the cities had a definite impact on our overall marksmanship as a country.
Yes, 110%. So to keep that going, they also had created badges from the Department of the Army at first, the Distinguished Rifleman's Badge, and then the Distinguished Pistol Shot Badge. Basically, individual honors, which are still to this day the highest individual awards for marksmanship commissioned by the U.S. government. And the different military branches have a couple of different rules compared to the civilian badges, but it is a huge honor to earn that because you are being recognized as you are top of other people, you're top of everyone competing in this sport. I'm not phrasing exactly correctly, but the Distinguished Rifleman's Badge is a different level. It puts you into this elite group of competitors that earns and demands respect when somebody sees it and knows what they're looking at. You've already proved yourself and differentiated yourself from everyone else.
And I think that's an important thing that we have to talk about here because Serena, being incredibly humble, she kind of buried the lead with that.
Yeah.
Serena has a Distinguished Rifleman badge, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and that, as you just stated, is an amazing accomplishment. Don't ever sell yourself short on that. That is certainly, you know, certainly something that you can and should brag on yourself about. So can you tell us a little bit of what goes into obtaining that designated rifleman badge?
Absolutely. And I'm going to circle around a little bit because we've got a couple of different topics that have all kind of come together. But
sure.
As you ask one thing, it waylays into another because it's so all interconnected between my story, but also the history of the National Matches, the history of service rifle. To start back out, I am also a writer in the outdoor industry, as Logan had mentioned. And when I first started writing, John Parker from NRA Shooting Sports USA, it was my first SHOT Show. I set a meeting with him and we sat down and he was like, "Serena, you are my young girl writer that likes old guy sports." Because every time I would come up with something, I'm like, "Oh, I'm interested. My latest thing is I want to go double distinguished and earn the service pistol badge. Bullseye precision pistol is even smaller than service rifle, one-handed 50-yard and 25-yard shooting with iron sights." Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that most people are just like, "Why? You know, why are you interested in this?" But for me, and I think for everyone else who participates in the sports, is there's all kinds of different shooting disciplines, which is what's amazing for everyone. That if you're more interested in things with immediate feedback, shotgun might be more important to you. If you're someone like me who values precision, service rifle, small bore, air rifle, precision pistol, there are sports for everybody. It's a matter of being introduced to it, having somebody to learn from, and understanding, you know, what you need to do to improve in those areas and having that support system. As far as service rifle goes, people will say that it's dying. I don't like to believe that it is. And personally, a lot of the reason that I do what I do and I try to work with juniors, so kids under 21, I run the Ohio Junior Program, trying to get as many articles out there, help people. I'll have people contact me all the time asking my opinion on products or things like that, you know, representing companies so that I can shoot well. And I don't represent any company that I don't personally use their equipment exclusively for service rifle and that I'm doing well with it. So one of the big reasons that I shoot for both Citron and Sierra is because they support juniors. When I first started in the junior program, Sierra, they'd still do this, offers a discount for the junior competitors, and they would donate thousands of blemished bullets. And that allowed me to compete, especially when I was younger. And it still allows a lot of the other juniors to compete who might not have the funds to be able to do so otherwise.
That's really cool. I didn't know that.
Yep. And Citron also does a junior discount. And their service rifle scope that they released a couple years ago now is an affordable scope, but it's still top tier quality. So it's around $500 MSRP. Night Forces are around $2,000. Not saying anything bad because Night Forces are also a great scope, but I also really feel close to that brand because they brought something in that parents can afford if they want to shoot with their kids. My dad started competing with me when I started competing, so we compete together. So for, say, a parent who has like three kids that are wanting to start in the sport, they can get multiple scopes for the same amount of money that they could get one Night Force. So the affordability aspect is there, especially in support for juniors, which are the future of the sport. For and sure. You do see a lot of female juniors as well, a lot okay. of very talented female juniors. You try to get people to come back to the sport after they go to college or get married, and eventually they usually do come back, but it's hard with equipment. A lot of junior programs will loan equipment out, and then when they age out at around 20 or 21, depending on CMP versus NRA rules, and they have birth dates and some other basically stipulations in there of how that works, that they don't have any equipment and have to buy it all on their own. Some of the different programs, I was like a combination where I wanted my own equipment. We were supplied it by the club, but we couldn't take the rifles from the club to compete. But then there's other companies like Rock River who offer junior discounts. Like I said, that's a really big thing for me of companies that are willing to forego that and offer special pricing for like the kids. And obviously the kids can't own the rifles, you know, they're not of age and that becomes to the parent, but facilitating their ability to compete and learn marksmanship, understand the Second Amendment, understand the importance of shooting well, and firearm safety is a really big thing there as well. So,
in your discipline, I mean, truly is a discipline. It's probably the most disciplined, yes, of the sports. So it's also teaching focus and attention to detail and body control. I mean, there are so many lessons that apply to life outside of just the shooting sports as well, that for CMP or NRA high power competition, it's there's no better word for it than discipline.
110%. I know I've said that before, but that's another statement that I can't agree more with. And shooting any discipline, but especially service rifle, has taught me so much, from self-confidence, greater patience, understanding, like I played soccer, I played softball, I enjoyed it. And once I got to about middle school age, I was heavily bullied by the girls on the team and I didn't want to do it anymore. So I left those and I didn't have any outlet for the competitiveness that I had, but I also couldn't find a place that I fit. And when I found the high power team, that's another complete accident. I basically fell into a group of friends that became my family, coaches that I still talk to that are, I went from having no grandfathers to probably 20 now, honestly. And being able to learn from them and their experience, and then also being able to shoot and learn from kids all over the country that have the same interest was really, really special. That's cool. Service rifle, I started shooting in 2015. I showed up to this junior program that does small bore in the winter, so your 22s, more Olympic style, and high power in the summer. High power is a discipline, high power service rifle. We shoot 200 yards standing, offhand, 200 yards rapid fire sitting, so 10 shots in 60 seconds with a magazine change, 2 and 8, can run 5 and 5, but that's mostly for match rifle. 300 yards prone, we shoot 2 and 8 again, but 70 seconds rapid fire prone, and then we move back to 600 yards and we shoot slow fire prone, so you have a minute per shot. And there are several different courses of fire. You typically have an 80 shot match with sighters at each position, and you have 20 shots per stage, or a national match course, which has no sighters, 10 shots offhand, 10 sitting, 10 rapid prone, and 20 at 600. And those matches are your excellence in competition matches. So in order to earn the Distinguished Rifleman's Badge, you have to place in the top 10% of non-distinguished competitors, those who have not earned the badge. And the number of legs that they have are given out based on how many non-distinguished competitors. So the points towards your badge are given out in legs. And those amounts are 6, 8, or 10, dependent on the number of competitors who are at the match. You need to earn 30 points over the course of your career to earn that Distinguished Rifleman's Badge. Military has some sort of different stipulations of so many points have to be from military matches. You can only shoot so many of these EIC matches a year. 5 plus nationals for civilians, so you're basically limited. You can't go to an insane number of competitions and hope to get that. And a lot of local matches, there was one, they had a lot of people, I think they had 3 or 4 legs given out, 10, 8, and 2 6-point legs, and they had about 40-something people, which is a really big crowd for a local match. People are just always competing with, for kids, it's, school starts, they've got track meets, they've got sports. There's always so many other things going on. Primers, powder, trying to get all of that is expensive because buying off-the-shelf ammo isn't really affordable. I mean, you can do it if you have a good bit of money, but there's very, very, very few companies that produce ammo capable of what we need it to do downrange. So everyone ends up reloading their own ammunition, which is another time sink, for lack of a better word. So sure, it takes a lot of time, with dedication with matches, being able to get there, being able to perform at the level you need to earn that badge. And one of those legs has to be what we call a hard leg. You need to either get it during the national matches at Camp Perry, or you need to be the winner of the match over all the distinguished competitors as well and be non-distinguished. Wow. So they make it a little bit difficult.
Which is why it's a big honor. I mean, if it was easy to get, it wouldn't mean anything.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And because it is, such a difficult thing to obtain, do you know, how many Distinguished Rifleman badges have been awarded?
I'm 2479. So, okay. And that's something that all of us remember. Every person, it's such a big deal that every person remembers their badge number. It's also a tradition, like, to wear the pins on your hat.
Okay.
And the pins that I wear, you end up getting more and putting them on different things. But when you leg out at a match, it's traditional that someone gives you one. So one of my junior coaches, Travis Gilkey, mailed me his pin that was given to him when he legged out. And when I was around somebody, I gave them a pin. I didn't give them the one Travis gave me because that was too sentimental, but I gave them a pin to wear right away. And that's just long been a, there's a lot of different nuances and traditions within the sport and service rifle as a whole.
Sure.
So one of the things
sure beats getting your hat shot at a trap shoot if you go 25 straight.
Especially if you're wearing a nice hat too, right? You
know? No. I've seen a lot of water dumped on people with water bottles when they leg out, a lot of different things like that. But one of the reasons that I love the sport so much, and you had asked me about what I think the future looks like. We've been using a lot of electronic targets, which have really changed things for speeding up matches, but also allowing people who are older or who are incapable of pulling physical targets in the pits all day to go out there and compete. The CMP has said that they're looking at trying to have all national matches next year be on electronic targets, which would be the first time that's ever been done.
Oh, wow.
They do a whole week of electronic targets, but the what's called the board week, where you have the President's 100 match, the NTI, the National Trophy Team match, all of those have been shot on paper for over 100 years, essentially. So I was just going to say that there's so much tradition from years and years and years that things are changing, but I believe that there's always new traditions that are evolving. And a lot of the appeal coming from service rifle is being a part of history and understanding a lot of the old firearms that were used, like Garands, but also that it gives you such a great foundation for marksmanship that you can take what you learn in service rifle as a discipline and apply it to any other sport.
Hey, everyone. Alan Forkner from the No Low Ballers podcast here, and I'm talking to all the collectors and firearms enthusiasts out there. If you're on the hunt for exclusive high-end firearms, then look no further than CollectorsEliteAuctions.com. This is the premier auction site for serious collectors who are looking to find rare and collectible firearms, accessories, and memorabilia. At Collectors Elite Auctions, every auction is carefully curated, featuring some of the most sought-after pieces in the country. Whether you're looking to expand your collection or find that one unique item, this is where top-tier firearms meet serious bidders. And with easy-to-use online bidding, it's never been simpler to add items to your collection. So if you're ready to take your collection to the next level or get started collecting, visit CollectorsEliteAuctions.com and start bidding today. Oh, and don't forget to listen to the No Low Ballers podcast, where we dive into the history of firearms and the stories behind some of these incredible pieces, brought to you by GunBroker.com.
Now, you had mentioned President's 100. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So the President's 100 is held at the national matches every year. It is a one-day-a-year match. If you mess up, it's, you know, better luck next year. There's no second chances. There's no ciders. It is the biggest match of the year. People will spend their entire careers trying to get their rifleman's badge, but they'll also spend their entire shooting careers trying to earn their President's 100 tab. And for military, it's a much bigger deal. I don't want to say much bigger deal. It's a different honor as well, because the tab, they're authorized to wear on their uniform.
Okay.
And that's something that they can keep there all of the time. I am not in the military. I can't give you all of the ins and outs, but there are a number of military competitors who have read up on that badge and who have just basically shown up at the President's 100 match thinking, hey, I'm going to go out, get my tab, and come home, not realizing that there's a lot of effort that goes into it.
Yeah.
I've made the President's 100 twice now. Every year I would do something dumb. I was capable of doing it, but I'd end up doing something dumb. It's 10 shots offhand at 200 yards, no sitting, 10 shots rapid fire prone at 300, and 10 shots at 600. And then they take the top 20 competitors, and those come up in a like high pressure shoot off where it's 1 minute per shot. They all come up and down at the same time, and you've got target boards behind each person. They announce everybody, and you basically can watch in real time as people post where stickers of where their shots are. This year, the shoot-off was extremely intense because you had three people going into it with the same score, top three shooters, all from the Army Marksmanship Unit. And that's an important point, too, is your civilians are competing against everybody. Civilians competing against the Army Marksmanship Unit, competing against the reserves. The Marine Corps has somewhat gone away with their team, so that's a point of contention for a lot of people. But essentially everybody. It isn't just, hey, you're best in your class, or you're best among the women, or you're best among the kids. You are the best in the country if you are winning these matches and how you place in these matches.
And you've done it twice.
I've made the 100 twice. So you're given an award for the top 100 shooters. And at first, when you look at that, you're like, oh, top 100? That's fine. That's super easy. It is not. It is not. I mean, generally, the cut is if you lose, you're about safe at like a 292, 291. So that means that you can drop 9 points out of your 30 shots to make the 100. And that's going to vary in weather conditions. This year, it was exceptionally hard with the three shooters, like I said, were going in at the same score, different X count, and they just got dumped on with rain.
Oh, really?
Dumped on. But made it even more interesting, I guess, for the rest of us to watch, because they still did an incredible job. But the conditions play a really, really huge part, especially with wind reading and what relay you're on. I mean, this year for me, one of my goals is to make that top 20 shoot-off now that I've made the 100. Okay. And I've been, you know, this year I was number 50-something. I'd have to look exactly what number I was, somewhere in there. I think I was like 18th civilian, but 54th or somewhere in there overall. And I was, I think, 3 points away from being in that final shoot-off. The year before, I shot a 97 out of 100 on my feet, 100 being a clean, but I shot a 97 with a 7. I dropped all of my 3 points in one shot. I got super nervous and just tanked it. If I had that shot back, I would have been top woman in the P100 that year, which would have been incredible. But the point difference is very, very, very small once you get to the high level.
Well, and it gives you something to keep working towards next year, right? I mean, it's always pushing yourself to do the next thing. That's the whole, you know, the interesting and impressive thing, I think, about competition. You know, not only are you competing against the other people that are there, but you're competing against yourself to make yourself better.
100. I don't want to keep saying 110%, but yes. I mean, that's one of the great things about competition, is you learn so much about yourself and how you can apply those lessons to your daily life and make you a better person, a better friend, a better, you know, better at work. So many of those lessons that can be transferred to the rest of your life.
Yeah, for sure. And you had mentioned, and I want to touch on this just briefly. So at the time of this recording, by the time this comes out, you will have already started a new job. And you had mentioned in your previous conversation there, you'd mentioned the Army Marksmanship Unit.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that relates into this new impressive job that you're taking on?
So the Army Marksmanship Unit was created in 1956 by President Eisenhower in order to basically promote competition and promote high-level marksmanship among soldiers, both to teach other soldiers and to beat the Soviets at the time. So a number of the shooting Olympians that went to represent the United States this year came from the Army Marksmanship Unit. So they have several teams of shooters, service rifle, service pistol, international, shotgun, action, and ITG, their instructor training group, whose job it is to shoot and win, but also to promote marksmanship among the rest of the force, to train everybody in those basics for them to take it back to their individual units and learn from that. So I'm going to be the social media specialist in charge of all of the media accounts, essentially, for the unit. It's a new position, is my understanding. It's temporary, so we'll see if they keep me for a while or not. But when I first started, And I went to Camp Perry, where the national matches are held for the first time in 2015. I shot the Small Arms Firing School. And the Small Arms Firing School is a program that's required by law to be held to train anyone who shows up, essentially, to shoot. And it's taught and run by the Army Marksmanship Unit. So I worked with Lane Icord, who is no longer with the unit. He's since gone back to his home in California, where he was from, and he shot as a junior. But being around the soldiers who shoot at such a high level gives you a much more appreciation for the military and also so much more to learn from. So I learned a lot from him, and that was my first exposure to the unit. So I'm really excited to be able to be a greater part of that and promote the shooting sports, but also promote marksmanship and the great work that all of the soldiers are doing there.
That's awesome. Very cool. You have achieved so much in such a small time, and it impresses me. You know, President's 100, you know, to make in the top 100, and you know, and you think, oh, well, I could still do better. You know, most of the time when I go to the range, I'm shooting by myself, and I'm still not the best shooter by myself at the range. So, but it really is. It's impressive. To know the dedication, because you and I have known each other for quite some time now, and yes. And it's been really, really cool to watch the progression and the expertise. I mean, it's, you know, you said earlier on, you're like, I was a nerd. Like, well, Serena, I hate to break it to you, but you're still a nerd. But you're one of our nerds, and I don't think we'd have it any other way, right, Alan?
No.
I truly appreciate that. But absolutely. One thing that I didn't get to touch on too much is you had asked what it was like being a female in the shooting space. Most of the shooters are all very, very supportive. I did have one person who didn't want to hear, when I was still pretty young, didn't want me to hear them swearing to their friend. And instead of just walking off, told me to go play with my Barbies. And that was, I was so mad at him. So then somebody else was like, dude, what's your problem? She's out here on the range with the rest of us. Like, leave her alone.
Right. But go play with your Barbies. I'd be like, excuse me, what the hell did you just say to me?
I don't remember what I said to him, but I was very angry about that. Yeah. Another theme, I guess, Alan. I don't think of myself as an angry person, but I guess that a lot of the story I am.
You know, you just took it out on him on the targets, that's all.
There you go. Gives you more motivation.
In general, I think people are really, really accepting, and they're excited to see young shooters out there, especially young females. And sometimes I think it affords you greater opportunity. The more interesting segment that I've noticed is working in the outdoor industry. So I'll still be doing some of my freelance, but prior to, you know, taking this job, I've been writing for a variety of companies for a number of years now. And there have been a couple moments in my career thus far that I have noticed there's not as many booth babes and the gun bunnies, but it is sometimes hard to be taken seriously, because there are some people out there who, if you don't have almost no clothes on, and I've been told that I'm too wholesome sometimes, that, you know, I don't have that sex appeal that makes some of those things interesting, and that's not something that I want to represent. I want to be able to make the shooting sports, marksmanship, gun ownership, competition, all of those things attainable for people, but also for everybody. That it's not about what you look like what you're capable of, you know, gender, age, fitness, that you can still do it no matter what that is. I did have one individual at a trade show who's from an optics company, and I walked up to them and I was asking about their new product offerings, and he sat there and he looked at me and he's like, you know, it's complicated. And I was like, oh, really? So I started asking him questions. He's like, you know, there's a lot. I don't think you could understand it. So I started asking him very specific questions, to which he looked at me like, I don't know what to do now.
What he's actually saying is, I don't know the answers to this.
So. Right, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Well, he had pretty made it obvious that he knew the answers when he was talking to the gentleman before me. So it was one of those, but I think it's harder. I think there's a lot of different segments. I don't like to play too much on the, I don't want to say woman card. I just want everyone to be interested in shooting overall. If that's another young female, great. I think it's great, especially for young women, to get involved in shooting because it helps build self-reliance. They can take care of themselves and gain more independence. I also hunt, so you can progress into that as well and learn to be more self-sufficient when it comes to food sources. And it also gives you a lot more purpose, passion, and it just makes you feel better about yourself. Self-confidence all the way around. Somebody puts you down, you have something proving what you can achieve, whether that's in the form of a Distinguished Rifleman's Badge, a President's 100 tab pin, any small victory that you have. You can use that to keep yourself going when other people try to tell you you're worth nothing.
Yeah, that, I couldn't have said it better myself. And that's, I think that's a perfect note for us to kind of wrap this up on. The shooting sports are for everyone, and everyone should be involved in them because it really is one of the greatest things we have to offer as a culture and a country. I mean, there's nothing quite like it here, and as you have exemplified, you know, anyone can do it, you know, and we're for the most part accepting enough that, you know, we want more people to come into this sport, and we enjoy seeing all sorts of folks come in. So Serena, thank you so much for taking some time to be on the show with us today.
No, thank you. I'm sorry everything got turned around a little bit at times, but it's a very intertangled web of how you unravel all of those pieces. And if any of the listeners are interested in learning how to get involved specifically in service rifle in general, please reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube under Serena Shoots, but I'm very happy to help people, even if you don't know where to start and are just interested in shooting in general.
Awesome. Well, hopefully we'll have some folks that'll see and hear this and will reach out to you because they could not have a better person to learn from. So, well, all right. I think that does it for us on this episode of the show. We appreciate everyone tuning in and watching and listening. We appreciate you being here. Make sure you're reviewing the show. Leave us some comments. We do read and respond to all of that. We appreciate you all being here. Without you, there is no us. So thank you for letting us be able to be us, for Alan and I to be our goofy selves on here, to be our gun nerd selves and have great people like Serena on with us. So thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in, and we will see you right here on the next episode of the No Low Ballers podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.